Welcome to What's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key topics of interest to our state. I'm Lynn Hatter. Florida could cover around a million more low-income people if it expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, but the House seems to have thrown cold water on that idea. So does that mean the Medicaid expansion issue is dead? We'll take a look at the weekend Medicaid, talk with one group that has a lot riding on the outcome, and speak with a political scientist who says there's bound to be some wheeling and dealing as the 2013 legislative session gets underway. But first, these Florida headlines.
From Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Bank. Tourists visiting the Sunshine State spent more money last year than ever before. According to preliminary figures released by the quasi-public marketing firm Visit Florida, visitors spent a record $71.1 billion in 2012. That's nearly a 7% increase over 2011, which was also a record year. According to the agency, nearly 90 million people visited the state in 2012. That includes 10 million people from overseas and about 3.6 million Canadians. Tourism is one of Florida's most important economic drivers, with more than 1 million people employed in a variety of industry-related jobs. Governor Rick Scott wants $75 million in this year's budget for Visit Florida to pay for its marketing and advertising efforts. Advocates for people with developmental disabilities are calling on Florida lawmakers to have the words mental retardation removed from state law for good. As Sasha Cordner reports, they're hoping to get the word out about a bill that's been filed for the third year in a row that would put an end to the so-called R-word.
Michelle Poole is the president of ARCA Florida, a group of advocates for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. She says it's about time for Florida to join the ranks of most other states in removing all references of mental retardation and replacing it with intellectual disability. She says this issue is very near to her heart. She has 18-year-old twin daughters, one of whom has an intellectual disability.
In elementary years, Gabby would go to all the school functions and no problem. Since Shell hit high school, it's difficult to take her sister with her because not only is her sister bullied, she is too. We need to stop this bullying and the lack of respect that people have for people with developmental and intellectual disabilities.
The ARCA Florida is leading an End the R-Word campaign. There's also a bill filed in the House and Senate. The Senate bill has passed one committee so far, while its House companion has yet to be heard. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
An attorney for one of the defendants in the hazing death of a Florida A&M drum major says his client is going to plead guilty and cooperate with prosecutors. A lawyer for 24-year-old Caleb Jackson says his client will plead guilty to felony hazing and manslaughter. Jackson currently has been in jail for violating probation and could enter the plea in as soon as April. Attorney Chuck Hobbs says Jackson has expressed remorse over what happened to drum major Robert Champion. Champion died in 2011 in Orlando after he collapsed following what prosecutors say was a savage beating during a hazing ritual. A dozen former Florida A&M band members have been charged with manslaughter and felony hazing. Members of the Florida legislature are debating how to pay for the state's Everglades restoration projects. Regan McCarthy reports the House and Senate are pushing two different plans.
The House is getting some backlash from environmental groups that worry the measure wouldn't make sugar growers pay their fair share when it comes to cleaning up phosphorus in the water. Governor Rick Scott has had a hand in Everglades cleanup issues. He shared his thoughts on the bills following a cabinet meeting Thursday.
We're supportive of Senator Simpson's bill. I think the House bill just passed the committee, so we'll be working with the House on their bill.
Scott says his goal is to ensure there's enough funding to improve water quality in the Everglades for years going forward. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Florida would have a poet laureate appointed by the governor if a bill passes the legislature. Jessica Palumbo reports the measure passed committees in the House and Senate this week.
Florida had a poet laureate, Edmund Skelling, who was appointed for life, but he died last year. And Joe Kavanaugh, president of the Florida State Poets Association, is in Tallahassee this week pushing for an overhaul of the poet laureate appointment process. The idea is for the governor to appoint a poet every 4 years. That person would spend time in schools.
We need to work with young people to get them interested in poetry and to realize that, in the words of Peter Mankey, who is currently the poet laureate of St. Petersburg, Florida, poetry is the emotional history of the world.
The poetry bill is sponsored by Senator Dorothy Hugel and Representative Dan Rollerson, a Republican from Plant City. If the bill passes the full legislature, Rollerson has said he'll write a poem about the legislative process. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Employees at a Central Florida healthcare staffing company are allowed to drink on the company's tab on the company's time, thanks to a perk known as Beer Cart Fridays. Advanced Medical CEO Jennifer Fuselli told the Daytona Beach News Journal she's been rolling out the beer cart for 2 years as part of an unorthodox corporate culture that rewards employees for hard work. She says the company began in 2005 with 4 employees and now has 350 workers in 2 locations, Port Orange and Broomfield, Colorado. The company also hosts costume days for Halloween, barbecues on the clock, and a birthday get-out-of-jail-free card for a paid day off. Employees are restricted to 1 beer, which Fuselli says is a small price that pays huge dividends. This is Florida Public Radio.
Welcome to It's About Florida. I'm Lynn Hatter. Medicaid has come to dominate headlines in the first week of the legislative session, dividing Florida's Republican lawmakers and sparking talks that an expansion of the program under the federal health law could be dead on arrival. The House opposes the expansion. The governor supports it. And while the Senate has yet to state its position, that chamber's leader says the writing is on the wall. Here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at the week in Medicaid.
The House kicked things off Monday when the committee charged with exploring the Affordable Care Act said the state can't afford to expand Medicaid. In speaking against the expansion, committee chairman Richard Corcoran likened it to the state's $20 billion class size amendment, saying Floridians can't afford that same kind of growth in Medicaid.
We have a situation where you're going to have tons of people. This is good. Let's do it. Let's do it. And then 10 years down the road, as numerous representatives said, this is dollars that compete for education dollars. These are dollars that compete for every other dollar in the budget 10 years from now when maybe the estimates are way off.
Opponents worry if more people are allowed into Medicaid, it would crowd out other critical funding areas and hurt the private insurance market. Under the health law, the federal government would pick up all additional costs for the first 3 years and 90% in the out years. House Speaker Will Weatherford doubled down on that opposition Tuesday. In opening remarks, he told a personal story of how, when he was 15, his 13-month-old brother Peter died of cancer at a time when his family was uninsured.
I don't know the specifics of what happened. I know that my brother had cancer. I know we were uninsured, and I know they weren't able to pay the bills.
Weatherford said the family relied on charity and safety net services to cover more than $100,000 worth of bills, but he neglected to say what that safety net was, the Medically Needy Program, which gives Medicaid dollars to fund poor families who aren't poor enough to qualify for traditional Medicaid. Meanwhile, Governor Rick Scott, in his State of the State address, reiterated his support for an expansion of Medicaid. The governor, who often talks about growing up in a poor family, says he knows what it's like to be uninsured.
I cannot, in good conscience, deny the uninsured access to care.
While all this was going on, Senate President Don Gates spoke to reporters. The Senate panel looking into options under the Affordable Care Act has yet to state its position on the matter, but Gates says he sees the writing on the wall, and it doesn't bode well for Medicaid expansion.
It takes 3 yeses to get to yes and 1 no to get to no. And it sounds to me, from what I heard today stated in the Florida House, that the House of Representatives and the Speaker are inclining toward no. And if that's the case, then nobody else gets to bat, the lights get turned off, and we all go home on that issue.
In previous comments, the chairman of the Senate committee, Republican Senator Joe Negron, had said the state can't just say no to Medicaid expansion without having an alternative plan.
The concerns about Medicaid expansion are very real and very legitimate. But I don't find persuasive the idea that we just have to have people go to the emergency room when their 11-year-old kid has an earache at 2 in the morning, that's the best we can do. We can do better than that.
Some lawmakers say the state should look to Arkansas, where the federal government recently signed off on letting that state use Medicaid money to steer low-income people into private health plans. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ronald J. Eben.
And that brings us to where we are today, in a bit of Medicaid limbo.
A few weeks ago, we spoke with the Florida Hospital Association. Hospitals have been one of the most outspoken groups pushing for the Medicaid expansion, and that's because that's where people go when they need health care and they don't have insurance. The association's president, Bruce Rubin, talks about why his group is so invested in the Medicaid expansion and why they're pushing for action from the state. Welcome to It's About Florida.
Well, thank you for having me.
And introduce yourselves to our listening audience.
Sure. I'm Bruce Rubin. I'm president of the Florida Hospital Association.
So what would you say is the biggest issue today affecting Florida hospitals?
Clearly, the question of whether the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, the national health care reform legislation, will be implemented in this state. That question remains to be answered, and the future will be shaped by that law.
So the big issue I'm assuming that you guys are looking at is extending coverage for Medicaid recipients. Why is that so important to hospitals? Because I think there was a trade-off in the Affordable Care Act where the hospitals agreed to take some cuts in exchange for extending Medicaid coverage.
But let's take a look at Florida. Out of a population of over 19 million people, Florida has 4 million people who are uninsured on any given day. In just hospital care alone, there was almost $3 billion in 1 year in what we call uncompensated care. This was the cost of care for those who had no insurance coverage and couldn't afford to pay it. Now, that's unmet cost. And that unmet cost has to be covered somehow. So a good chunk of it becomes a cost that is covered through commercial insurance and out-of-pocket cost. So all of us who have health insurance or who pay out-of-pocket some portion of our cost of care when we have to seek hospital services are paying for that uncompensated care. It's a hidden tax in our on Florida businesses and individuals who pay for health insurance and who pay out of pocket. That is why it's so important in Florida for these people to get insurance coverage, because that hidden tax would be taken out of the cost of care for everybody else.
You know, we've been hearing a lot about the possibility of expanding Medicaid. We've got two legislative committees that have been meeting on it, and we've gotten several state estimates about how much it's going to cost in the out years. The uncompensated care element, why isn't that factoring into the conversation that lawmakers are having now?
Hospitals in Florida will see their Medicare reimbursement for services provided reduced $10.7 billion over the next 10 years. We will see cuts in Medicaid, what we call disproportionate share payments, and we don't even know the amount yet because they haven't determined it state by state, but the law requires that those disproportionate share payments in Medicaid and Medicare be cut by some amount. We also know that there will be there's a premium tax, so our businesses and our individuals in Florida who pay for insurance will pay a tax, all to provide coverage, additional coverage to 32 million or so Americans who are currently uninsured. In Florida, some portion of our 4 million. And the benefit to those who pay health insurance and to providers who are financing this additional coverage is that people who used to come in and have no way to pay for their care will now – their care will be covered through either private insurance or Medicaid. So there will be a big reduction in this hidden tax of uncompensated care. And that is the quid pro quo. That is the reason why it's in the interests of our Floridians from an economic standpoint. So – and what's interesting about it is that for the first 3 years, the federal government will pay the entire cost of insuring some portion of these 4 million uninsured. And in Florida, we think it could be roughly 1.5 million to as many as 2 million. Likely, it'll be about 1 million people who are covered through our Medicaid program and another half a million or so who are covered through commercial insurance in what they call the insurance exchanges.
You know, when you talk about this, in looking at the state's estimates, it seems that no one has actually factored in the cost of getting these people insured. So we have how much money the state will spend, but we don't have any idea of if the state will actually save money in expanding this coverage. And so I'm wondering, have you all run the numbers? Has anyone taken a look at, you know, the cost versus the benefits?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, let me address your question, but let me just finish up on the other part by saying that if we don't cover people through Medicaid, the important thing to understand is that we will still pay. If we don't cover people from Medicaid, we still have to lose the $10.7 billion in Medicare payments. We still will lose some hundreds of millions in disproportionate share payments under Medicaid, and our businesses and our individual Floridians will still pay this premium tax. So Florida and Florida's citizens will pay for this coverage. If we don't provide it, if we don't extend it to people in Florida, we'll simply be paying for people in other states to have the coverage. That will leave us with even more uncompensated care, because we will have less money from Medicare and Medicaid covering that uncompensated care. So there'll be an even bigger hidden tax and just as many people uninsured. There's also an equity issue here, because people who are at or below 22% of the federal poverty guideline in income are already covered by Medicaid. They are entitled to that coverage, and they will continue to be. People who are above 100% of the poverty level will have access to health and subsidized coverage through the insurance exchanges. So you will have roughly 1 million Floridians who are between that 22% of the federal poverty guideline in income and 100% who will be left out of this. So for one segment of our population, solely based on their income, they will be denied what all other Americans would have. So it's an issue of equity, and we know from all the research that when people have insurance, they tend to be healthier, and if they get sick, they tend to get their health restored more effectively because they've had access to doctors, to primary care. And when they don't have insurance, when people don't have insurance, they wait and wait and wait before they go to see a doctor, or they end up going to an emergency room. So the reason why it'll be more affordable when people have insurance is because they'll have access to routine care throughout their life, and they tend to stay healthier. People tend to stay healthier when they have that.
What else are hospitals looking at as far as cuts go? I know that the governor's budget proposed a 2% cut to hospitals. So not only are you guys getting it on the federal level, you're sort of kind of getting it on the state side too.
All of that is correct. I mean, we just sustained a $700 million cut in December at the end of the last Congress to pay for this temporary approach to the debt ceiling. I'm sorry, the fiscal cliff. There's so many different terms. This was about the fiscal cliff. We still face another round of deficit reduction. So that's over 10 years. Then we've got sequestration, where we're looking at $3.5 billion in cuts. All in all, when you look at over the last 10 years, Florida has been cut – Florida hospitals have been cut $15 billion in payments. So what does that really mean? When we talk about Florida hospitals being cut, there are two ways that two consequences, and you get some combination of these consequences depending on the hospital. One consequence is that this unmet cost, because Medicare and Medicaid pay less than the cost of care for each patient, that's unmet cost that is shifted to people who can pay, to commercial insurance premiums and out-of-pocket costs. So whenever the government cuts payment to hospitals in entitlement programs, Medicare is an entitlement, Medicaid is an entitlement. People are – if they meet the criteria, they are entitled to the coverage. So the hospital sees the patient and the government decides what it will pay. So when these cuts are levied, that cost is unmet, so it must be covered by somebody. So it's shifted to the private sector, to commercial insurance and out-of-pocket cost. So that means somebody's picking it up.
Given so many pressures on the system, how are some of these hospitals still able to continue?
There are tremendous financial pressures, and as these cuts are levied and then the consequences of these cuts play out over the years, it becomes more and more challenging. And we have had some hospitals really struggling and making big reductions in staff and that type of thing. But there is the people get sick and so there's a tremendous need in these communities to have access to hospital services. And so people in the community keep finding ways to keep their hospitals going.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on It's About Florida.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
And that was Bruce Rubin with the Florida Hospital Association. We now turn our conversation to putting this all in context. And for that, we're joined today by Florida State University Professor Carol Weissert. Dr. Weissert, welcome to It's About Florida.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So it's been a really busy week. On Monday, the House came out and said no. On Tuesday, House Speaker Will Weatherford came out and said no. The governor clearly says yes to the expansion. And the Senate President Don Gates is saying, well, you know, two yeses and one no. The no basically tanks it. What in the world has gone on this week?
Well, you know, Medicaid is such a tremendously important issue to the state of Florida, as it is to all other states, that whenever anything happens in Medicaid, it's huge news. And this issue about whether this really is a key issue, whether the state decides to expand the Medicaid program over the next few years. And so this is the issue of the session, and anytime anything happens related to it, it's a big deal.
You know, something interesting that happened on Tuesday was House Speaker Will Weatherford. He recounted this story about, you know, when he was 15, his younger brother, who was about 13 months old, died of cancer, and he said the family was uninsured at the time, and, you know, they had to rely on safety nets. And later on, the Times Herald Bureau contacted his father, and his father said, well, we use Medicaid. And then come Wednesday, you see the speaker kind of issue this statement that says, well, we were on the medically needy program, and that program is funded by Medicaid dollars.
I thought it was interesting in two reasons. One is it really illustrates that Medicaid is so complex, you know, that people really don't understand that medically, you know, the medically needy is an important part of Medicaid, but it sounds like it's something different. And the second thing is, I think a lot of times these issues are kind of under the surface, that people that really benefit from them don't recognize how important they are. And I think both of those issues, the complexity and this notion that Medicaid, everybody hates Medicaid, but people really don't know perhaps the details of how it operates. And I think both of those things really augur against Medicaid because people don't really understand it well, and maybe even the legislature doesn't understand it that well.
And Medicaid has a stigma. I mean, it's a very stigmatized program.
It does. It does. But it's not only is it a huge program, but it provides services in so many different areas, the medically needy, the long-term care, home and community-based care, care for pregnant women, for sick children. I mean, it's a huge program and it has so many tentacles. But yet, you're right. I mean, this perception is that it's whatever it is that I don't understand, it's bad.
You know, something interesting coming out this week is Senate President Don Gates. Now, there is still a whole other chamber that has yet to kind of weigh in on this. But Senate President Don Gates seemed to throw, you know, kind of some ice water on the issue when he basically said the House says no. We need three, you know, all three branches of government to agree. If one says no, that basically kills it. What was your take on that?
And I think there's some, you know, there are things going on that I'm not aware of. I do know that both the Senate and the House committees, the select committees on the ACA, have really been working very hard on this issue, asking all the right questions, bringing the right people in, and trying to make a really good faith effort here. So I was surprised that the Senate would want to call in, you know, pull their cards even after all the work that they have done on this issue.
And it's interesting because now, you know, you have lawmakers saying,
especially on the Senate side. That committee's chairman, Joe Negron, had said earlier that, you know, the state can't just say no to expanding Medicaid without having a backup plan.
Yeah.
And now you have, you know, some people banding around, well, maybe we should look at Arkansas.
Yes, or Indiana or a variety of these other places. My problem with that is that we have a 60-day session, and what we're into the first week of that 60-day session. And I don't know, these committees have been meeting, they've looked at these areas, and to bring on these kinds of issues late in the game is, you know, seems a little, it's going to be a little difficult.
Something that's kind of lingering out there is Florida's Medicaid managed care expansion. Now, the federal government has given us provisional approval, but they haven't, you know, given final sign off onto this. Could that come into play later on?
I suspect it can. You know, all these issues are going to involve federal-state negotiations. The Indiana plan and the Arkansas plan are all under negotiation between the federal government and the state government, keeping in mind Medicaid is a federal-state program. So I think this is another one of these negotiations that are going to be taking place to finalize the approval for this area, and how it relates to these other issues is really an interesting question that I don't think we can resolve at this point.
So how does this bode, do you think, for the rest of the legislative session? Is this kind of, as Senate President Don Gates hinted, dead, or do you think we're going to continue to see this rear up again?
Well, I certainly, you know, Senator Gates is closer to this than I am, so he has a better sense of it. I would hope that we would still have the issue, because it is such an important issue to the state. It's so many state dollars, so much federal dollars involved in this, and how this gets resolved is going to affect, what, a million people in terms of eligible for expansion, and the managed care proportion is even larger than that. So these are huge issues affecting a lot of money and a lot of people. So I would hope that the issue is not dead.
What do you make of some of the opposition that has been raised to this, that it's going to cost the state too much money, that if you expand Medicaid eligibility would, you know, hurt the private insurance market?
Know about the affecting the private insurance market. These are likely to be people that don't have insurance or don't have very good insurance. The thing to keep in mind is that, you know, there is this federal match that's 100% for 3 years and then 90% after that, which is a higher match than the ordinary Medicaid program match that the federal government does. So we are talking about a lot of money here, and a lot of it is federal money. But the concerns about long-term issues and whether the feds will renege on their bargains, all these kinds of things, you know, I think are undercurrents in this really important but very, very difficult issue to predict.
Well, Dr. Weiser, thank you so much for speaking with us here on It's About Florida. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And finally, state economists have released their latest figures on the cost of the Medicaid expansion to the state. Florida's share would be $3.5 billion over the next decade. The federal government would pay $51 billion, and that's a net gain of $47.5 billion. Governor Rick Scott says the fate of the Medicaid expansion is up to lawmakers to decide.
Look, it's the beginning of a session. There's going to be a good conversation about how, on one hand, we've got to make sure we're responsible to taxpayers. And on the other hand, we've got to make sure people have access to health care. And so both of those are important to them.
There are still several weeks left in the legislative session, and a lot can happen in the next 56 days. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next week for more discussion on the issues impacting our state.